Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast. Relevant and engaging content designed to help you dominate the day.
Imagine, Behind the Knife listeners, that you're sitting in the ICU on your 19th night in a row, and your patient, who is post-op day 5 from a Hartman's procedure, goes from a 1 to a 4 liter per minute requirement. You don't think anything of it. He's a big guy. He's sitting without a CPAP. But then you get a notification from the hospital AI to consider a stat chest x-ray. Fine, you order it. Next thing you see is a massive right-sided hemopneumothorax. Somehow the AI caught the iatrogenic from this injury from the central line placed yesterday, which developed slower than you would have guessed. Is this possible? So welcome all, I'm Lyman Oley, one of the surgical education fellows at Behind the Knife. Welcome back to our AI Journal Club. And today's episode is about a really hot paper from Microsoft that went viral. It's titled Sequential Diagnosis with Large Language Models. And the typical news headlines are about a revolutionary medical AI that outperforms physicians with diagnostic performance of 80% compared to, unfortunately, a physician average of 20. So today we're going to discuss what that means, what the implications it has for us as physicians, a brief overview about the paper itself. Now, luckily, I'm joined by Dr. Adam Rodman to help dissect the study and tell you what you need to know. Dr. Rodman is an assistant professor and practicing hospitalist and AI researcher at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Dr. Rodman, thank you for taking the time to join today.
It is my true pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you again. I'll start with a brief overview of the study. The title is Sequential Diagnosis with Large Language Models. And when they say sequential diagnosis, they're referring to what we do every day, which is just a workup. So how do you refine your differential with an iterative process and get to the most likely ultimate diagnosis? Now, to quantitatively score physicians and the AI itself, the authors developed a sequential diagnosis benchmark. And I think that's worth just a minute to explain because that's how they're grading everybody. Now in this benchmark, they have multiple LLMs that talk to each other and each of them has a specific role. We call those different LLMs that talk to each other agents. So when people say multi-agentic modeling, they're talking about multiple LLMs, each with a specific role. So they ask each other questions. One reveals information to the clinician or the AI taking the test, and the other talks about the clinical findings. Now, the goal is to reach a final diagnosis, at which point the correctness measured by the actual closeness to the real-world diagnosis as well as the cost is calculated. Now, the LLM responsible for navigating this is also going to create synthetic findings if the user goes off track, and that's meant to not bias them or give them hints. Anything you'd add to that about how the system works, Dr. Rob?
No, I think that's a very good description.
Well, these cases are the next point that I want to talk about in this paper. They're all based on 304 NEJM clinical pathological conference cases. These cases are extremely complex, and in the paper they mention that they can be common conditions, but the first couple that you look at, I see neonatal hypoglycemia from a biologically active teratoma, which is a diagnosis I would never...
I see that all the time, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's one of those where I have no clue where that comes from, and they're rare. And the other one I saw was an embryonal rhabdomyosarcoma of the right peritonsillar region. I'm trying to piece together those words is difficult for us.
The sad thing is I remember reading that CPC.
Yeah, and they're memorable for that reason. But the paper does say that these are common diagnoses, and I think that's one point that I would argue. I don't know what you would say about that, but
they're not. I mean, I am but a general internist, but they are not. Diabetes, common.
Right.
embryonal or biteratoma, uncommon.
Very uncommon. So what they did was they tested humans, and these humans were US and UK physicians, a median of 12 years of experience, and they achieved an accuracy of 20% at a cost of $3,000 per case.
So there are a couple caveats here. Humans were not allowed any external resources, meaning no Google, no large language models, and you can't phone a friend. Each human did about 36 cases, and there were about 21 physicians, varying from hospitalists to primary care physicians. The LLM, however, functions much differently. The LLM-based model works with multiple simulated doctors who talk to each other, and they argue at the pros and cons of each next step of the iteration in diagnosis. And each of these LLMs has a unique and distinct role that we'll get into later. That's a model that's something I wish we had when talking about challenging cases. It's what consultants or senior faculty members and mentors are for. Again, in this study, physicians were not allowed anything external. So I'll pause there and ask Dr. Rodden, what do you think about that?
Oh, you mean about the fact that humans were solving the case? So the justification for doing this, they had a pretty decent justification, right? Because these are published CPCs, and they were worried that if they allowed humans to use resources, they could just look up the CPC. I mean, it's necessary to take the context of this in play, right? So the humans didn't get to use it. I don't think it's necessarily a knock against the study. We always make design choices. What I will say is that Google, they recently had a study published in Nature. It's an old study. It's actually on a Palm-2-based model where they compared their own system against people, but they also gave a baseline of humans using Google search, humans using the AI. And I think that methodology gives you perhaps a better comparison of what would happen if you start to add different resources. But to me, that doesn't necessarily invalidate the study. It's just a design choice that I think was made for an important reason, because they're using CPCs, but we do have to keep that in mind when we're talking about the magnitude of the difference.
Yeah, and I think it's important for how the conclusions are portrayed.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that gets lost in some of these headlines. Mm-hmm. Because if you take most PCPs and you ask them about pediatric 1 in a million cases, I think it's fair that they get 20% in it.
Well, the other thing that I would say, I think the numbers and the headlines really stripped the context of the larger context history of differential generators, which is, AI is, I know you know this, but AI is not a new technology. We have been talking about differential generation, depending on how you define it. We usually go back to 1959 with Ledley and Lusted, and you can go back to 1982 and look at Internist 1. And if you want to use this, solving CPCs is X times better than a doctor, like, we surpassed the AI being better than a doctor back in 1982. It's one of these things, like, it doesn't invalidate the study. I actually think it's a very important study and it does something interesting. But for that headline value, it is not surprising that any sort of AI system, not even an LLM, even a simple Bayesian system or an expert system could outperform us. And in fact, like, if you look at Isabel Health, if you look at DXplain, they've been outperforming humans for decades.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important point. And when I was reading it, I think if anything, it didn't invalidate the need for humans. If anything, it made it more important because, one of the points when you read this study is these are very, very beautiful cases. I mean, they're in NEJM for a reason. They're structured very well. They have the information that you need. But I think real life is much different.
Well, and they have, I think this is the important thing to talk about the data set, because it's less, like, they're very hard. And for benchmarking, hard cases are actually good, right? You want to be able to see the difference. But one thing that makes CPCs unique is that they all have a pathological ground truth. In my field, like in internal medicine, we often do not have a pathological ground truth, right? Especially in primary care, but even in hospital medicine, we often don't know. We have a working diagnosis, a clinical diagnosis, but we don't have a definitive ground truth. And I think it's important to study sequential diagnosis. And I think the CPCs are very good for that. But most of what you and I do in the real world doesn't have a pathological ground truth at the end to compare against, or even when we get it. I mean, for surgery, you get it weeks later. It doesn't affect what you're doing at the time.
Right, right. And I think surgery is a little bit, can sometimes be a little bit more certainty when you look inside, but a lot of the times you just don't know. And we don't know the origin of the disease necessarily. We don't
know
why.
And when you make a decision to not operate, you don't know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you only know on the ones where you make that decision to operate.
Exactly. And And I think the other thing that's important is extracting this information from patients is tough in real life. I don't think it's as easy as they're presented in the scenarios. And I think anybody that's talked to a patient in the ED will get that. The stories are hard. They make no sense sometimes, right? You have alternating issues from family members, alternating stories from family members, and, trying to piece all that together is a challenge in and of itself. And I guess one thing I wanted to make a note on that scenario is that I think the human aspect is still ultimately extremely, extremely important. And I think about a lot of the times, have you ever seen that box in medical school training where it's, common presentations of common diseases? And I think about that box. And for other people, the other part of that box is rare presentations of common and rare presentations of rare.
And it's just a lot of the times in real life, as soon as we leave that common of common, it's tough, I think. I think it's tough. So
well, and LLMs are good at common presentations of common, and they're also good at common presentations of rare. They're not right. good at rare presentations of common or rare presentations of rare. So they have their own sort of biases.
Exactly. And I guess my question, one of my questions to you is, how do you think we should test that in the future?
What's the way to test that? Right. So the answer is real clinical data, right? Like the real case mix. Now, sequential diagnosis is going to be really hard to test on the real case mixes. Why? Because it's a, what do you call it? It's like a choose your own adventure game. And in real life, you don't know what the tests you didn't order would have showed. So sequential right. diagnosis is really, really important, right? If you're actually talking about real diagnostic decision support, you have to test sequential diagnosis, which is why I think this paper is so important. It is important to understand how LLMs actually do go about selecting tests. But it's going to be really hard to test this even in real patient data without running a clinical trial because right. like I do studies with my own clinical data. We recently had one in our emergency room and you don't know what you don't know. Like I don't right. know what would have happened if you'd gotten a CTA on this patient. If somebody wanted to do this, it's impossible to simulate.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's a great point. Yeah. Like, well, when we make a conscious decision not to do something, we have to live with the fact that we just don't have that information. And
I mean, I will say like we just got a paper accepted at Nijim AI, one of my brilliant grad students, Aliyah McCoy, where one of the things that we found is these very powerful reasoning models. So like O3 is the model behind the Microsoft multi-agentic system. They as a trade-off for their improved performance, they lose the ability in the middle to have nuance. They become very extreme in their decisions. And you and I both know in real medical care, probably the decisions you and I agonize over more are not when we did something, but when we chose not to do something. When we
100%.
Don't do the test, when we don't do the surgery, when we say, you know, I think doing this will cause you more harm. And again, we need to test this. These are testable hypotheses. But from some of my own research, that seems to be the area that these reasoners in particular suffer at.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess if you can expand on that a little bit, what's the way that we approach that in the future, that particular problem?
With LLMs or with humans?
Yeah, with LLMs.
So we're entering a really strange phase. So first of all, I would say in general, like I think we've gotten the context of this paper. It does not mean that Microsoft system is four times better at us. It does mean that Microsoft system does show that it can do sequential diagnosis well, at least on the CPCs. And that question is, how does that translate into the real world? Now, this is where the human-computer interaction matters so much, because I would make a guess, and we'll have to test it, but I would a priori guess that this thing is going to over-order tests. It's going to have false certainty about the next test that need to do, which will benefit some patients well, but actually could cause harm to other patients. And then what does that right. mean for the human user? How does the human use, like, do we become just lose our critical thinking skills? Does it make humans run away from nuance? We don't know the answer to that, but human-computer interaction is tricky, and these models have weird impacts on us. So yeah. I think I'm excited about the system. I want to see much more work done in sequential diagnosis. I want to see how this works on real clinical data. But at the end of the day, like this system is not going, something like this is not going to end up, it's not going to be a doctor in a box. It's going to be a human using it. And what does it mean for you as a surgeon or me as an internist working on the system? How does it change our decisions? And does it change our decisions in a way that gets better care for our patients?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, one thing that I think would be interesting, and I'm sort of thinking out loud here, but I wonder, what if you allowed physicians to use LLMs for these sequential diagnoses when you're comparing them? And I really am interested in that performance. So can a human outperform a purely purely LLM-based model using an LLM as a tool?
You've designed a great yeah. That would be a super interesting addition to this study. What does the human do? How does a human change the performance of the system? In some of my, I mean, this is why I get, you know, I've been a researcher for a while and I never got hate mail until like the last year and a half, but I've gotten some hate mail because a lot of my studies have shown that high performing LLM systems don't necessarily improve physicians. But I wonder in that sequential diagnostic setup, would the human improve the LLM? Would it make it worse? We don't know, but it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, I think that would be very fun.
Hey, Behind the Knife listeners, it's Kevin here. Do you dread doing your notes at the end of clinic? Do you feel like you can never get ahead of charting? If you are shaking your head yes, keep listening. Freed AI is a medical scribe on a mission to free clinicians everywhere. Freed AI listens, transcribes, and writes medical documentation for you. Written in your style and ready the moment the visit is over. All you have to do is give it to your patient. Just imagine leaving in the office at the same time as your last patient. Freed is HIPAA compliant, secure, and takes less than 30 seconds to learn. Artificial intelligence cannot replace you, but it can do the administrative work that no human should be subjected to. Get back to doing what you love, helping your patients, and let Freed AI do the rest. Freed learns your style over time, just like a human scribe, and it will never quit on you. Freed is used by over 6,000 clinicians from every specialty. Give Freed AI a shot to help you with your clinic. BTK listeners get 50% off their first month with code BTK50. That's BTK50. Now back to the show.
You know, on that point, the other thing that I wonder about is these LLMs are so sensitive to the stuff that you put into them and the way you phrase a question. And we see that with prompt engineering. Perhaps you saw the Grok news recently where one line in the prompt engineering caused some extremist behavior.
We'll say that.
Yes. Unfortunate extremist behavior. Now, that being said, it's going to be interesting to see, is there differences in how physicians use it and how they phrase the question to the model. So, but that's just a future thing we'll be testing.
Like some of the things that my research group is looking into, so one of the challenges, I think, as you know, with language models is they're very sycophantic, and physicians, when they use them, have a tendency to love it when it agrees with them and disregard it when it disagrees with them. And the challenge is it's the doc. When you put information into an LLM, you're putting in the orders and tests and information you have collected. And the LLM can grok what you're thinking, right? It knows. Like if it sees the test, it knows what I'm thinking. And I may love it because therefore it just tells me what I'm already thinking. I suspect that effective systems are going to kind of take the human out of that loop, that will have either collecting information directly from patients, or will have some sort of knowledge graph that extracts and organizes information in the chart that gets fed into the LLM. Because part of the, you know, we have to also think about the effects on us, and LLMs are weird. LLMs change the way that humans think.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that we are going to see a lot of evidence of that soon, very soon.
Well, did you see the Meter study today on coders?
I didn't. So
METR, Meter, is a wonderful research organization, and they released a study looking at claims that like AI-based coding tools, if they actually made people more efficient. And they ran a randomized controlled trial similar to the one that we did last year. And what they found is that even though the experienced coders, they all expected that they would be much more efficient with AI tools. I think 20% of them thought they'd be more efficient, or 20 thought they'd be 20% more efficient. And after they did the study, they said, oh, we were 20% more efficient. In reality, they were almost 20% less efficient. Using the AI tools actually made them much less efficient, even though they had the perception that it was making them more efficient. So it's just like the human-computer interaction component is so important to actually seeing benefits. And it's outside of an RCT, it's hard to study because benchmarks without a person don't tell you what it's going to do to people.
Exactly. Yeah, that's an amazing story. I'm going to read that.
I'll send it to you.
No, I appreciate it. And you know, as someone that uses LLMs frequently to code, I can see where you get that finding from. Especially in someone who's working in an environment that they're already extremely familiar with, I can see how you get falsely led in a direction with AI generated code, and that just ends up costing you time. So I can see that.
Yeah, sure. And it's consistent with right now all of the studies done in medicine, which have all unfortunately shown a very similar thing, which is even in high-performing algorithms, you might get the human a little bit better, but you never get it as good as the algorithm itself. And in some of the imaging algorithms, like you really get degradation by using the AI in some of these imaging studies.
Right, and you know, we could probably talk for an hour on that topic alone, but what should we say about final comments to wrap up the discussion of this study?
Yeah, I mean, so like what I would want doctors to know is do not read the study and freak out about the headline. Microsoft has not made a system that is 4 times better than them. The numbers have meaning. They're not meaningless, but it needs to be taken into context about what we're talking about. And this is, this system has nothing to do with replacing your jobs. But studying sequential diagnosis is really important. I think this is a cool system. This multi-agentic combination of experts, we'll have to see how it works. I don't know if it works any better than just the base model, which is O3, a very powerful model by itself, but maybe it does. And studying sequential diagnosis is really one of the next things we need to start looking in when we're talking about clinical decision support. Traditionally, like we've never gotten to this area before because no one has ever had AI algorithms, like naive Bayesian algorithms or expert systems never performed this well. So we never had to worry about this. So we're kind of in new territory. And I think it's really cool that we're in this territory. But the general public should not read this, and doctors should not read this study and say, oh God, Microsoft has invented something that is going to replace us. It is a cool and important research study. Doctors are probably never, definitely surgeons are never going to be replaced. So, principal audience. But even good old fashioned internists like me are a very long way from being replaced.
Yeah. And I think that when I first read this and I saw the multimodal approach, the first thought that came to my head is, but just imagine if we had 5 consultants that actually could talk to each other.
We're going through every CPC together. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
But it's fine. It's fine. I think the problem when you have a human baseline is that there's a temptation to say, okay, the model is this much better than the human. But it's not a task that we would ever expect a human clinician to do, let alone like a generalist.
Right, exactly. And I couldn't put it better. But that's all we have for today. And I can't thank you enough for your time. I learned a lot, and I have some great papers to read, which is amazing.
Oh, sorry. I have a tendency to do that.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Rodman. And from behind the knife, dominate the day.
Be sure to check out our website at www.behindtheknife.org. Download our free app available for Apple iOS and Android. Simply search for Behind the Knife in the App Store or Google Play to download the app. In the app, you can listen to our episodes, watch high-yield videos, and even access our premium content, including our oral board reviews and trauma video atlas. You can also follow us on Twitter at Behind the Knife and on Instagram at Behind the Knife Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to leave us a review. Content produced by Behind the Knife is intended for health professionals and is for educational purposes only. We do not diagnose, treat, or offer patient-specific advice. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Until next time, dominate the day.